We're going to come back in a moment with Gerald Clark. We'll take your phone calls as we continue talking with him about amazing things that happened a long time ago. Welcome back. We'll take your calls this hour with Gerald Clark as we talk about his works, The Anunnaki of Nibiru, The Seventh Planet. And Gerald, are your books still available for people?
Yes, they are, George. They're available on Amazon.com as in paperback, and I also have them as audiobooks, both of them, narrated by me, available on my website.
Super. And I still have your website as GeraldClark77.com. Is that it?
That's correct.
All right, super. Since you've been doing this research, have you changed anything, or has anything changed your mind about the way you thought things really happened?
It would be easier for me to catalog the things that haven't changed since I discovered this information, George.
It kind of backed up things for you, didn't it?
It changed my whole paradigm. And actually, it does that to a lot of people as well who put their eyes on this information for themselves and see this. But, you know, we like to think of writings of the past like Atlantis or Sumer as mythos. But we're told that the connection between the Anunnaki and Atlantis is Poseidon himself, who we know is Enki. And so we mentioned one of those characters that was here who had many names, and one of those was Poseidon. And his arch nemesis, you know, in the Greek mythos was Zeus. Well, it turns out it's his half-brother, Enlil, and playing different roles in different cultures for us. So this is hard to wrap our heads around, right? Because if that's true, everything we've been taught is part of a simulation. And maybe all these civilizations are just teaching tools for us to have a compare and a contrast to see how the attributes of those civilized people respond to the laws of their land so that we have a model to compare. I'm not really sure, George. What do you think?
Well, I think when you talk about the Greek gods for a moment, I am convinced that there were some kind of beings on this planet, let's call them the gods, that the people in that area of Greece definitely saw and interacted with. Something was happening there.
Well, just as they did in Sumer. And they were not only, you know, bringing them food and worshiping them in the ziggurat temples, but they were clothing them and bathing them and real tangible physical things, you know. So I do think there were an ancient astronaut race here, just like the Sumer people believe. They call them the Anunnaki. In my God table, I tracked them through from Nibiru through Sumer, through Rome, or through Egypt, and then through Greece, and then to Rome. And they took on different names. For instance, we were talking about Atlantis. So if Poseidon was the god of Greece, he was the god of Atlantis in the documents, right? So all of a sudden, we see this symbol of Enki with the water flowing out of his side with fish coming out of it, and he's the god of Atlantis. Well, that kind of fits, right? So if you follow it through, he affiliated himself with the planet Neptune in the Enuma Elish. Well, that never changed all through his affiliations. And similarly with some of his kids, like Marduk, who was the chief deity of Babylon, which, you know, got a really bad rap in the Bible because he was one of the gods of the east fighting with Yahweh's troops, right? And then but his other son, Thoth, was really interesting because he shows up in these emerald tablets talking about the fall of Atlantis and establishing Egypt in order to preserve the wisdom of Atlantis. And I think you and I both know there's been some fantastic finds in Egypt that point to a knowledge base that goes far beyond what man had. And a lot of it seems to all these disparate cultures all through the world, including the Mayans, by the way. And this was agreed upon by Manly P. Hall and Zechariah Sitchin, that they were a lost civilization of Atlantis, if you will. And it looks like they did disperse multiple directions, according to their documents. By the way, I wanted to say one of the best histories of Atlantis I'd ever read, yes, with the Critias and the Timaeus talk about it. That's the source that everybody uses to go try to find Atlantis.
Yeah.
But in the Lost Teachings of Atlantis by John Tenniel. And he was a student in a monastery in Tibet where a group of people who had Atlantean records and are still teaching there now, and they don't disclose their location for probably good reason. But they had a very good history of Atlantis, and Thoth was very much involved with that, just as he was in the Emerald Tablets. He was told to take these records and go establish a new civilization and raise the hairy barbarians to the light. That was kind of his mission. That's what he was told. Actually, if you put your eyes on the Emerald Tablets over there, George.
Yes. Yeah, we've done some stuff on that.
Yeah. So they're mentioned in several places. I know there was a lot of controversy of them, but in the history of Atlantis, in the Lost Teachings of Atlantis by John Peniel, it mentions those documents when they were given by Thoth and how they came into human hands and things like that. So they've been around for a very long time, much earlier than 1920.
Do you think that the Anunnaki, the gods of Sumer, mm-hmm. and the gods from Greece were the same?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. That's what really, you talk about head turners, George.
Yeah.
That's what shocked me. If you could take one of these beings that was showed up in the Sumer documents, like Enlil or like Enki that shows up in Atrahasis and in the Epic of Gilgamesh, and they were the two premier gods, if you will. One was the Lord of the Air and one was the Lord of the Sea. And they had to be separated because their territories overlapping meant conflict. They did not get along well. And Zeus and Poseidon didn't get along well either, did they?
No, not at all. So do you think the Anunnaki are looking for the one god like we are?
Oh, they absolutely are. And that led to my second book. Before I do that, let's just do a little god table real quick. So Enki, Ea Nudimmode on the Buru from the Enuma Elish, he became, he was Ea Nudimmode there. He became Enki on Earth, which means Lord of the Earth. Then he became Poseidon. He also became Atrahasis to the Persian culture. He was their chief deity. Okay, while his opponent Andromanu was his brother Enlil. So they had summarized these two top Anunnaki. And we have to be clear: there was a council of 12 of them listed in the document.
Okay.
And Enki and Enlil were high-ranking beings. They weren't the highest-ranking. Their parents were. That's why, and their parents weren't on Earth except for visits. So those two left here were the top dogs. Okay, so, in that table, I took the 12 council members from Nibiru the best I could and walked them through all those cultures, from Sumer, Egypt, Greece, Rome, and even to today, which is where it gets very impactful. Is that these beings have been the gods of those major cultures, and they mapped for this council. And of course, they had many, many children who were dispersed all over the world and had taken over territories of the entire world by Plato's time, according to his writings.
That's amazing work. Let's take some calls here for you, Gerald. Okay. They're lining up for you. Let's go to Dave in New Jersey to get things started. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Good show tonight, let me tell you.
Thank you, sir.
I want to ask your guest, did any of the Anunnaki ever mention UFOs or visitors?
That's a very good question. From the Ube period of Eridu, we have pictures and actual statues of reptilian-looking beings that were there along with the artifacts. And that brought me to some very interesting questions about, were there other species, other races involved, not just the Anunnaki? And as I looked into this very deeply, I ran into some documents I'd found way back in 2005, and I mentioned them online. It's called the Threat Briefing Report. And if you just search Gerald Clark and Threat Briefing Report, you'll see that. And it does mention several races, actually more than you would believe. From that report, there were more than 40 races.
There were like 57, weren't there, Gerald?
Oh, it was, yeah. Actually, the KGB report mentions 86, whereas this one said there were a very large number, more than 50. But they've really just focused on the 9 that were here that had some interaction with mankind, and the 3 that they really focused on, one of which was the Anunnaki, and gave their whole history in the, I don't know, starting from the Lyran Wars in the galaxy, go way, way back, all the way to how they landed in Alpha Draconis. So they have an affiliation with the Alpha Draconians, who we call the Dracos. And these, this is really crazy, because when I was young, I watched this movie called The Gargoyles. Did you ever see that one, George?
No, but that sounds like a great name for a movie.
Yeah, well, look it up. It's an old movie. But anyway, that was the first image I had of these reptilian beings that were living in caves that had wings. And, you know, they kind of like our concept of what our Satan looks like, right? Like that, with a tail. And so it turns out that according to the descriptions, that's what the Draco look like. And so they're apparently dimensionally higher than us, but they're in relationship with the Anunnaki as part of their colonization of this planet and many other planets. Have you seen the movie Jupiter Ascending?
Mm-hmm.
Give you an idea of what these higher-level dimensional beings are doing relative to alliances, allegiances with other races, and resource gathering at all levels.
Right? Now, the story from Zechariah Sitchin, of course, of the Anunnaki coming here because they needed gold to spread in their atmosphere, and that they genetically altered the creatures that were on the planet here and made them basically in their image. Now, what do you think, one, the creatures were like on this planet that they genetically manipulated? And two, doesn't this sound much like the Bible when they talk about God making us in his image?
Well, absolutely, to the second part. That's what got Eric Von Doniken kind of in a tizzy when he remembered as a child he read Genesis, and it talked about let us in our image and our likeness, not just one, it was a group. And mm-hmm. now that we see that from the Sumer documents, in the Atrahasis itself, the Anunnaki Council made the decision to hybridize a being that was on this planet in order to replace a labor force that they had mining gold for them in South Africa. And we found many of those mines, there's thousands of them in South Africa, that have been carbon dated with human burning things and whatever inside the caves that were over 100,000 years old. But we know somebody was mining gold on this planet over 100,000.
Well, what were the creatures, though, that they manipulated on this planet?
Well, from the Atrahasis account, they described making this decision where Enki Poseidon and his half-sister Ninma Isis, okay, that's where her connection comes in Egypt, were told to go create a life form to replace these Ajiji miners. And these apparently was another race of beings that the Anunnaki had brought with them. Excuse me, I'm having a drink.
And did they make the Adam and the Eve when they did that?
Well, according to them, they made a being called the Adapa. And this was done by taking, and they tried many hybridizations through animals with themselves and other things that just turned out to be abominations, just didn't work out in the account. And ultimately, Enki himself took his reproductive material and mixed it with a egg of a bipedal hominid. And you and I, in our very first show, or second show, we were talking about the Denisovians and some of the timelines of the Neanderthal and how they crossed over. Well, there were several bipedal groups from about 400,000 years ago forward to the time that we think the Atrahasis refers to the Anunnaki being in South Africa, and that was about 220,000 years ago.
When the Bible talks about fallen angels, Gerald, are they talking about the Anunnaki who came here?
I think they're talking about beings that were higher dimensional. Some of them were Anunnaki. Some of them look like they came from other places in the galaxy. Okay. And this comes from the briefing report. But apparently, there's a lot of them who can take on from their material form of whatever it is in their dimension and take on a new form in our dimension when they come here and visit. So, yes, I guess you would say if somebody could do that, we could say they descended from a higher dimension into our dimension, and you could call them a fallen angel, but I think there's a lot of connotations with that. I think a lot of the different races could do that, and some of them were good relative to mankind, if you read the threat briefing report. Several of them were benevolent to mankind, but some of them were not. And that brings up another race here that was the alien grays from the Markov Foundation, which they were mentioned very specifically in the threat briefing report. And also, when you look at some of the beings that were shown in the Ube period of Origi, those clay statues look very much like what they're talking about here. They're kind of like, they're not really a gargoyle. They don't have the wings, but they're very reptilian looking. Okay.
Max in Eugene, Oregon is with us. Go ahead, Max.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was particularly interested in the discussion about the Mayan calendar and the Galactic Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I was curious about where he gets the figure 13,000 years. I think that's a baktun in the Mayan calendar, but it takes the solar system like 225 million years to orbit the center of the galaxy. So I'm wondering how does the baktun fit into that, getting close to the galactic center? Thank you.
All right. Where does that date come from? Go ahead, Gerald.
Well, actually, that's a good question. I was reading a document recently by Swami Yukeshwar. It's called The Holy Science, where he had written the first part of the book was to try to clarify what the position was from the Yuga cycles of where we were in the relative to the galactic center. And he had pointed out that in the Kali Yuga cycle, that he believed that his predecessors were absolutely wrong. And that was where the 432,000 years came from. So I'm not an expert on that, but I would point this gentleman to read that discussion from Swami Yukeshwar in The Holy Science. It's available on YouTube as an audiobook as well. Very fantastic and very deep thinking about this. And these are traditions that go back 10,000 years at least, if not more. So let's see. Did I answer the gentleman's question completely? He asked about the
13,000
and where we were relative to it. Is that the question?
And something about a 13,000-year period.
Okay. So when I did the math, or the precessional math, with 72 years per precessional degree slip, you multiply it by 360, you get 25,920. That's called a great year. There are many cycles that are used to keep track of time. It just so happens this one is based on the wobble of the Earth, our Earth. Okay. And by the way, Zechariah Sitchin wrote a very great book called Cosmic Code, where he described the relationship between the Anunnaki time and our zodiacal wheel and why they created it for us in the first place in order to correlate two different times. It's a pretty fascinating read.
Sure is. We're with Gerald Clark. We're going to take more phone calls when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast. His website is his name, GeraldClark77.com. A couple of his books, The Seventh Planet and The Anunnaki of Nibiru. Gerald, what fascinates you the most of everything you've studied?
You know, George, I think the thing that fascinates me the most is that whoever created us, if it was the Anunnaki, and I think there were lots of genetic hybridizations going on this planet prior to them, too. If you look at the evidence we have, I think there's been millions of years of occupation on this planet with various species and games they played with civilizations. But anyway, the one we focused on was the Anunnaki because we were mentioned in it, and they were the closest one to still having a relationship with us. And they showed up in our culture as the Greek gods, as the gods of Egypt, gods of Rome. You know, they were the same ones. So they had a significant part in shaping our understanding of what these time cycles mean and such, right? So, but I guess the most shocking thing to me, George, is, and I'm looking around watching, and I'm not an expert in gauging the level of consciousness, but I personally see that what happened at the end of the Mayan calendar in 2012 has done nothing but escalate, and people are changing consciousness all around us. Tell me about it.
They are dramatically. Stay with us. We're going to come back, Gerald, and take some final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Just an amazing discussion about things that really happened a long, long time ago. And we are back with our final segment with Gerald Clark. Let's go right back to the phones. John in Springfield, Missouri is with us. Hi, John.
Hello, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Love the show.
Thank you.
Love these episodes about Gilgamesh. Big fan. And once again, it's the only epic that I know that Gilgamesh mentions how old the Earth actually is and that it's ancient and its time is almost up. But that being said, sir, I was wondering, do you believe Gilgamesh to be one of the biblical men of renown, that possibly he may have been himself a hybrid? And I also wonder about Enkidu, the wild man that accompanies Gilgamesh. Do you think he's of a race of giants? Do you think he's an Australopithecine, possibly like a Denovian or other race of human that possibly existed at that time? And I will just take my answer offline. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Gilgamesh, what do we know about that, Gerald?
Okay, what do we know? Well, he shows up as one of the names in the Sumerian kings list.
All right.
Which, if you follow the King's List back, that was given to us by Roth, it goes way, way back, hundreds of thousands of years. So Gilgamesh was one of those on that list, and his mother was Ninfun, who we know, according to the Anunnaki, was a full-blown Anunnaki goddess. And his father was, what was his father's name? Oh, I used to know his father's name. Anyway, his father's name is on the King's List as well, just before him. I'll remember it in just a second.
Who was Methuselah related to?
Well, Methuselah was one of the biblical patriarchs from Noah to Adam, from Adam
okay.
to Noah.
Okay.
As you recall, he was a very long time, like 900 years. So this gentleman asked about Gilgamesh. So if he was a hybrid between the Anunnaki and his and a human male, which he was, then he was, because of mitochondrial DNA from the Anunnaki, he was two-thirds Anunnaki. And because of that, over a period of time, if you read the story of Gilgamesh, he was the king of the city of Uruk. And we're talking about, I think it was about 1600 BCE. And he, through this period of time, he became very, very large. Okay? And actually, the Bible talks about Nimrod becoming a Geborim. Okay? Well, a Geborim was a giant. And Gilgamesh was very, very tall among his people. As a matter of fact, a lot of edifices show him holding two lions, wrestling with them like their little house cats. That's how big he was.
Hmm.
Okay, well, in that story, he set out to find a way to have eternal life, just like this other king that he knew about, the king of Shurupak. This is where the Atrahasis story comes in. He knew that Atrahasis, Noah, had been given eternal life. When you get to the end of the Atrahasis story, Enki discloses that Atrahasis, via sutras, his son, that's why he saved him. And about that time is when his half-brother gave via sutra eternal life. That was Enlil. They were both there in the account. Okay. This is the Noah's Ark story, okay, which is much, much more interesting, I found, in the Sumerian account in its full detail. Anyway, so let's see, where were we going with that question? Oh, Enkidu. So Gilgamesh was a hybrid. He was a Geborim, and he set out on a journey and wrote the Epic of Gilgamesh, one of the most famous stories, about his journey to find eternal life. He wanted that elixir or whatever the king of Shurupak got, because he knew he was two-thirds Anunnaki, but he knew that Enki had spawned via Sudra Noah from a human female. Her name was Betanesh, and she was supposedly Lamech's wife. So the real father of Noah was Enki, not Lamech.
Did they all know this? Did they all know that there were extraterrestrials involved in their existence?
Absolutely. They viewed them as gods. I mean, if they were higher dimensional and they had scientific capabilities that the populace didn't have, I imagine an indigenous society would see an aircraft for the first time. They would treat them like gods.
He had a question about something called. I'm sorry, but he had a question about something called Enkidu.
Enkidu, yeah, I was going to get to that. So in the story, while Gilgamesh is trying to go find this elixir of life from Viasudra, the flood survivor and hero, he goes to the woods of Lebanon because he's seeking an encounter with the Anunnaki who are at the Temple of Baalbek. That's where they are in Lebanon. In the story. And he's going there, and he's been given the companion to help him face this terrible monster that guards the Baalbek city, which they called Humbaba. Okay? And this was some sort of beast that lived in the forest. Well, Enkidu looks like he was created by Enki to be Gilgamesh's companion. That's why his name is Enkidu. Anyway, he was some sort of hybrid. He looked like he was kind of barbaric. He was almost like the mirror of Gilgamesh's soul, if you will, to be a companion. And so he was wild. Gilgamesh encountered him, and then eventually they became very good friends in the story. Poor Enkidu died, and Gilgamesh was just distraught terribly over the death of Enkidu. And this is when he actually left the area and went to find Viasudra, Noah, to see how he could avoid the same death, because he knew he was partly Anunnaki and didn't want to die. Isn't that all of our story, George? We want
it sure
to be
is.
Mortal?
Do you think that the UFOs we're seeing today are the Anunnaki coming back here to just kind of check up on us?
Well, they've been here since a very, very long time. We've got stone pictures of those same-looking craft that go all the way back with the Mayan, with the Egyptians all over. So
they really never left, did they?
No. And I think they did use those craft in the story of where Horus and Set go to war. They're doing it in an aircraft. You get back to the Mahabharata, the gods of the Mahabharata were fighting in Vimanas. Airborne craft.
Right, exactly.
I think they've been here for a very, very long time. And various races have different kinds. So imagine the variety there could be.
And I think there were nuclear wars.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, wouldn't you go
by them?
Well, you asked me some of the head turner things. Some of it was nuclear war, the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, the destruction of Babylon. Which, when you see what clans were involved, this was the Enkiites and the Enlilite clans warring with each other. In particular, Marduk was in Enlil's region that caused a lot of wars. You asked me a really pointed question earlier about did the Anunnaki think that there was a creator of all above them? And
yes.
And what was the big aha surprise for me that's connected with that? They did. They actually did, and the one who talks the most about that, the Anunnaki, who we call Ninshida, he was Enki's second-born son that we know from Egypt and Atlantis of Thoth. He was Thoth the Atlantean and Thoth in Egypt, right? And he talks a lot about the being that in the hierarchical dimensions, and he lays this out in detail in the Emerald Tablet, which I included in my book, The Seventh Sign of Mercury Rising, and drew a hierarchy diagram of the dimensions that he described so that people could see this visually. I think I shared that with you folks on one of your shows that we did.
One of the early ones. Elliot's in Kenmare, North Dakota. Go ahead, Elliot.
Yep. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi there.
I was just curious if maybe you thought that these 12 that keep reappearing, if maybe they could be the 12 promised rulers that Abraham heard from about Ishmael in Genesis 17.
Well, that's interesting, and it's a little over my pay grade, Gerald. What about yours?
I only got part. He mentioned Vishnu and the 12 that were mentioned by Abraham. There was one more piece that he said I didn't quite get.
Go ahead, Elliot.
It was actually Ishmael. You think these 12 could be descendant Ishmaelites?
Oh, Ishmaelites, I see. Well, when we get, actually, you bring up a very good point. When I started reading through the Sumerian documents and started seeing all these names, being an engineer, I needed a flow diagram. I started connecting, well, who's the father of this one and that one, and started following it through. So I want to tell people that there is a genealogy table available you can look at to try to go from the prehistory on the Buru all the way down to the 12 tribes of Israel and connect it all together for yourself. Okay, including many of these connections. Now, Ishmael from the Bible, as you recall, there was Abram and his wife Sarah. Okay, and they had an encounter with Yahweh, who was asking him to go into this new land, this promised land. Okay, that we all know about. Well, in that account, he had a son, Jacob. First, I'm sorry, he had a son first with his wife Sarah, and it was actually not with her. It ended up being with his handmaiden, an Egyptian handmaiden named Hagar. And but they had a child named Ishmael. So this brings up the whole question about, well, who was it in the biblical story that was being sacrificed? Was it the firstborn Ishmael, or was it the secondborn once Yahweh was involved and impregnated Sarah, okay, his wife, and then had Jacob, right? So did I answer the gentleman's question about who Ishmael was?
As much as I don't know who he was, I hope you did.
I would say that the offspring of Ishmael became the Palestinian nation. That should be pretty clear.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you remember Yahweh told them they'd become as numerous as stars.
Where do you think the star cluster came from, where the Anunnaki came from? What system do you think it was from?
Well, in the threat briefing report, there's a very detailed analysis about a series of wars that took place through our galaxy and others. And I trace back the Anunnaki to what I would call the original Lyran Wars, in the Lyra constellation. And from there, there was a race of apparently beings that looked very much like humanity. They were kind of Nordic-looking, George, according to the report. But they were also they had the ability to convert external energy into internal energy, just like a reptile does. So they were considered a serpent race, even though they didn't look serpentine.
Now, Sitchin's theory is they came from a planet, Nibiru, in our solar system, but it's the 10th planet. It's way out there on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit. And then it comes around every once in a while, and all this, you know, Earth changes havoc and everything else occurs. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that may be the case, and I probably went too back far in time for you, but ultimately they left through the Lion Wars, these Lyrans, and they ended up in the Alpha Draconian alliance, if you will, where they occupied Nibiru and a few other planets as well. So it's correct to say that they were on Nibiru, because this is what we see from the Enuma Elish, where they describe the perturbations in their solar system got disrupted such that Nibiru and a small number of planets that surrounded its satellites were broken off in this disruption, what I believe was the passage through the galactic center, and caught up and their sun became our binary twin sun, according to this account.
Let's go to Roger in Oceanside, California, first-time caller. Hi, Raj. Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. I wanted to ask some questions about the Aztec and the Mayan calendars.
Sure.
I wanted to know how many baktuns were in those calendars, either 53. Each baktun was a 50-year segment and started on the year of the new fire, which corresponded to the Asian New Year's. And I was born on the new year, the last baktun called the 13th hell. There were 13 hells and 11 heavens, and the rest of the baktuns were neutral, which meant they could go either way, 50 or 50-50. And in the Bible, it talks about the seventh heaven. They had two prophets there, and one of them was taken in by a fiery chariot to the seventh heaven. And I speculate that he was taken in time to the seventh heaven of the Aztec or Mayan calendar and became Quetzalcoatl. Mm. And he was also Jesus Christ.
Right. I agree with you on that.
And Christ even admitted that in the New Testament. Someone asked him, you know, if he was one of those prophets, and he admitted, yes, that he was one of those prophets. One was taken up into the seventh heaven.
We also know Enoch from the Bible, remember, when he was 365 years old, was taken into heaven. And you bring up a very interesting point that many people may or may not know, and if they research their history, we'll find out that there were many incarnations of a character that we call Jesus, including Quetzalcoatl, including Thoth, the Atlantean, including Melchizedek, including Enoch, and many, many others, up to 24 that we know of.
And will there be more there, Gerald?
Excuse me?
Will there be more incarnations?
Well, this is where it gets really crazy, George. From the Lost Teachings of Atlantis, they talk about their master thought indoctrinated their order of the Children of Law 1. And the last incarnation of that being was who we call Jesus, okay? Which I agree with. This was Ningxeda, Enki's second-born son. And he's Mercury, the messenger, and he plays this role of being a spiritual initiator and guardian of the mysteries all through the ages of different incarnations, including Buddha and Confucius. And the last one, this is the most crazy one. So we never really asked ourselves, well, where could Ningxeda, Thoth, Mercury, where could he be hanging out if his last incarnation was Jesus? This, you know, was around 33 A.D., Well, there's been a new book that's been written about one of the Maha avatars on this planet that the yogis venerate, the highest gurus venerate, who was the teacher of this yuga cycle knowledge to Swami Yukasar, and sent the Yogananda to Encinitas, California, to set up Swami's. You know what I'm talking about? Same one. This being is named Babaji. I may not be pronouncing that exactly right. But the first time I was exposed to that was in the book, Autobiography of a Yogi. And apparently this being is one of those higher dimensional beings that has been here for, you know, since the time of forever, and occupies a place in some caves in Tibet, according to these guys. And this very being is the latest incarnation.
Well, great work, Gerald. And, of course, Gerald's work is his website, and it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Spirits in Stone. Stick around.